I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Smashbox TV's Past 499.
Yeah.
There's a niner in there. Holy cow, here we are. Nonetheless, not together again, but we're here with you guys in our souls, something like that.
Yep. As I'm sure everyone here knows and can hear, Terry's a little bit sketchy on the internet. Not going to lie, but we'll make sure.
Wait, you mean my sound quality?
Yeah, your sound quality. It's dropping okay. Some frames here. It's dropping a little bit of your audio now and again, but we'll get through it. And on top of that, I'm deathly ill, so this is great. Standing up to come downstairs here was pretty much the first time I stood up all day. I didn't want to miss this one. So, we'll see. If I have to run and or just pass out, I might do that. We'll see.
I mean, all right. If you're not taking one for the team or taking one for the show, I don't know what you're doing, but
I am going to take one for the team.
Nonetheless, welcome in, everyone. As I said, podcast 499. I myself have migrated from a relatively warm state of Texas over to Florida. I am excited to be here. Friend, I am not part of the Disc Golf Pro Tour event that's taking place in Texas at the Texas State Championship. So best of luck to everyone that is. And as part of that, I will be over at the Throwdown the Mountain property. Olympus Course, Phil, the Canyon, whatever you want to call it, is where I'll be for the weekend. So I'm excited about that. And I'm also excited that in a little while, we're going to have our specialist. We're going to have the new major winner in Missy Gannon. And she's going to join us and hopefully provide a little insight after the major this weekend. And Johnny, it's end of March, one major in the books. What's your thought on the spacing in which we'll see the majors this year?
I personally love it. Honestly, I love to have an early major. I love to have a mid. We'll say late spring major. I could go with then a midsummer one and then our fall one. I think it's great there was some sentiment that it was kind of like just, hey, why, you know, it's so early in the season. These players aren't even warmed up. They're, you know, we're not getting the best golf. I say too bad. I want to see this. I want to see which players have kept themselves in competitive fashion over the off season. I want this. Like this, I want to see these early majors. I wish we had one a little sooner for MPO. I know the first one is going to be Champions Cup, but I wish we had one almost this same weekend. I think this is a perfect time. You've had three events, and now we get a major. I'm 100% great with this schedule, honestly, and I'm sure it's not going to be this way next year, and I'll be sad to see it go.
Okay. Fair enough. You know, the fact that we have one here in the end of March, and it's exactly a month from now when we'll have a second one, that's going to be taking place at the Champions Cup this year, going to be held in the Peoria area. Then obviously you move into the summertime, and then we're going to have one in the fall. We're going to have a few events that feel like it. We're going to have the playoffs. I don't know. I can understand some sentiment that the USDG, the USWDGC just concluded back in September. We just had it. In theory, anyone that won, and that major title reign, so it was quote unquote short for all the competitors and all the various divisions, including Kristen. It's so much about the scheduling and about the timing, and that's how I kind of factored in a week more of those details. Johnny, I'm going, if you say my internet's bad, I think I have a secondary solution. So okay. If you want to take it away for a minute, reconnect and rejoin you here in hopefully under 60 seconds. Let's try that.
All right. Yeah. Theron Hobbs saying last week, I said Wisconsin would not lose to James Madison, and then we got our butts kicked. So that's a true statement. I did say that. But yeah, ultimately, as far as the majors go, again, having this early major to me is great. We got to see it. We got to see the players in less than ideal situations weather-wise, and maybe not completely where they want their game to be. You know, Kristen Tatar has only played, what, two events in theory, and she kind of looked like it this weekend. I'm not going to lie. There were a few things that were off with her game, but that final round looked like there was a few things off with a lot of the women's game. So we'll continue to kind of see this evolve. And I, like I said, I really hope we get a good spread of the majors throughout the year, because having them all backloaded like that was the original plan just doesn't sit with me. So yeah. And yeah, Kristen Tatar, we can talk a little bit about that real quick. We'll talk about how, you know, she had gotten bit by some fire ants on her ankle, and her ankle was all swollen up. It's Texas. Texas is almost as bad as Florida, which is almost as bad as Australia, that everything wants to kill you. Everything wants to attack you in Texas. So the fact that Kristen had that ankle issue from whatever fire ants she got into it's unfortunate, but every player deals with some sort of injury or having to overcome something. So no reason that she shouldn't be able to do that as well. So, you know, it's difficult, but we'll see. Terry, are you back here?
All right. I think on me. How does it look and sound? Any better?
Well, so far so good, but it's okay. Early. We'll see.
All right. Well, hopefully this does work out a little bit better. So I missed anything that you had said, but are we talking any results as we wait for Missy to join us?
We have not talked results. We just kind of went through a little bit of the just talked a little bit about Kristen Tatar and the hurdles that she had to have going into that. But we definitely can talk results. Let me pull them up here. I know you were fortunate enough to be on the ground for the event. You got to commentate with Zoe and Val. That was a pleasure to get to listen to. As we said, and our guest will come on a little bit later, Missy Gannon wins this one, shooting 12 under par over Evelina Salonen, who shot a 7 under and had every opportunity that final round to catch Missy and just couldn't put it together. Honestly, she just couldn't put it together. Her putting was atrocious. Her putting woes kind of snuck back up on her, and you could just tell. She didn't really miss a lot of comeback putts, which was good, but she was missing some of those initial putts. Third place, Valerie Mondejano, who I'm going to say right now, last week was apparently a week of bad takes for me, because I had said that Mondejano didn't have a chance to win, that she had showed us nothing this year that proved to me that she would be in contention. And she was in second place after the first round, and she really maintained it up there. So I'm, you know, if what I doubt what I said even got to her, but if it was, and it was a chip on her shoulder, great for using it. I mean, ultimately it's, you know, you can't argue with the results. So Valerie in third place at 6 under. Owen Scoggins, our ageless wonder, at 5 under. Heidi Laine at 3 under, and then Kristen Tatar at 2 under, 10 strokes off of Missy Gannon. 7th place, Jordan Lins. 8th place, Ella Hansen. 9th place, Natalie Ryan. And rounding out your top 10 was Holland Hanley. So ultimately, not a lot of, I would say the only surprise up there might have been Jordan Lins, in that she's only 930, yeah. She's only 933 rated, but shot above her rating to get up into that top 10. She shot a 988, a 986, a 954, and closed it out with a 1,003 rated round. So just, you know, if she's going to be one of those competitors that that is able to really kind of make things happen, then it's awesome. All right, Terry, give me a second here. We actually have someone in our green room.
What? Okay.
We do. So hold on 1 second.
All right. Hopefully all the buttons to be pressed and we can make the magic happen.
Oh, I hope so. I hope so, Terry.
And as you're doing that, a follow-up will be that we'll have hopefully some coverage of both Morgan and Jordan Lins here at Throwdown the Mountain this upcoming weekend. As I expected, we saw Morgan throw a little shade at her sister. Morgan, more often than not, although it's usually a close battle between the two of them, Morgan, you know, usually edges out Jordan. And this weekend, a very different tale. And as Jordan was up in the top 10 or 15 and then maintain that position as you're talking about. So a 7th place finish, incredible for Jordan. And I'll be excited to see how they both bounce back this week and what the shenanigans, what they're up to between the two of them this weekend.
All right. Are we ready, Terry? We ready to bring in our one-time major champion?
What? Yeah, I am. You are. Let's do it.
I am.
Let's welcome in U.S. Women's Disc Golf Champion, Missy Gannon. Hey, Missy, how you doing?
Hey, good. How are you? I couldn't figure out how to go landscape.
It's okay.
It's okay. If you rotate your phone, it might fill the screen, but if it doesn't, that's all right. Sometimes it does. That's probably how you felt. That's probably how you felt once in a while out there this weekend. Getting a little sideways. First and foremost, of course, congratulations. Thank you for giving us the time. We know that not only are you guys touring and traveling and on the go so much, but then you have all these additional asks and obligations and things that are asked of you. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for joining us. So 48 hours later, roughly.
Yeah.
What does it feel like now compared to the moment after you tap in and Perkins is talking? What's it feel like 48 hours later?
I can tell you that Tom and I have repeated it to one another multiple times that, like, I'm a major champion. I'm a major champion. Because a lot of the time you're kind of just like, you live the moment and then all of a sudden it's like on to the next one, which it sort of is that way. But I've been trying to prioritize actually enjoying the fact that, you know, that I have this huge accomplishment and, trying to sort of remind myself that it's a big deal and not just go, you know, not just move on, you know, actually bask in it a little bit.
Yeah. And it's funny because we often talk about players sometimes for good or bad. We ask of them and they ask of themselves to have a short memory, right? Like, any other event you don't win, you're kind of like, yep, that's a stepping stone and that's a learning moment. Let's move on to the next event. But this has to feel different, like you said, with the accomplishment in your back pocket, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was one of the next things that I wanted to accomplish. And it was sort of a goal of mine. And it's not only amazing that it happened at U.S. Women's, but that it was also just early in the year. So it's like always nice to get a win early, but the fact that it was a major just makes it that much more special. And, you know, it gives me that like early season boost of confidence that I think we all kind of look for when you're sort of getting back into the swing of things getting the new season started.
And you've honestly had a bunch of big wins. I mean, we multiple time DGPT champion, DGPT championships champion, Throw Pink is this because it's a major? Does it feel different? Because some would argue that those other wins are quote unquote just as big on the grand scheme of things, maybe historically looking back at them. Does this one feel different to you though?
I think as far as like a career milestone, it does, right? Because of the designation, because it's a major, and also because it's just a very special event, being that the number of young junior girls that I spoke to and gave encouraging words to, and they gave encouraging words back to me, you know, and the aspiring FA1 players who are hoping to, or the FA1 players who are aspiring to be play in FPO one day, and you know, having those interactions and having that environment be just such a, you know, such a special, unique thing was, yeah, just made it even more special. And it always feels a little different, U.S. women specifically. I think in terms of the actual, like, the four round, you know, same course sort of style, that feels a lot similar to some of the other events that I have won. But yeah, the fact that it's U.S. women's and it's a major, it definitely holds more weight on for me, at least.
Well, let me follow that up, and I hope I'm not busting you out too much. But right after we saw each other, and we were walking into the Austin Beer Works, and nothing wrong with celebrating. You confided. I don't know if you confided, but you said, you're like, I this like almost makes me wonder if I should take off from Texas State. Like a well deserved, and if so, it'd be a well deserved and totally understandable break. But where do you sit now here on Tuesday night? Where is that decision?
I'm playing. I'm going to play. Okay. I think that if I didn't have a week off after that, you know, I already have the accommodations here. I already, you know, there is I enjoy watching traditional golf. There is an event happening in Houston that I will be attending on Thursday, sort of as like a birthday present. My birthday's on Friday, and so since I'll be playing on Friday, we're going to kind of celebrate beforehand. So, you know, I'm able to do a little bit something else as well. And I'm only going to practice the course once. There aren't very many changes that I saw, so I'm not really worried about sort of getting like a ton of practice rounds in. So I'm going to play just because of all of those factors. And then, yeah, I'll have a nice week off afterwards.
To follow that up, speak to the grind that you guys have been on in terms of all of these consecutive weeks, including both Waco and this being a four round tournament. Just speak to that a little bit as to what this has been like for you for the last 4, 5, 6 weeks.
Yeah, it's been a lot. I think that the month of Texas is always kind of like a big swing, and the fact that we and also had a major in there, I think made it feel even more sort of overwhelming. But also I think it's so early in the season that you know, a lot of us are still really fresh and don't have that sort of like fatigue yet. So I think it was like a mix of both, where it's been kind of a grind, but also, you know, it's been fun to kind of have some bigger events earlier on, with Waco being an Elite Plus, and then Austin being, you know, a little different in terms of layout, or I guess kind of a lot different. But yeah, it's been exciting too. I think having Evelina, having four different winners already this season in four events is just such a cool, exciting thing. So even as a competitor who may not have won those other events, it was fun to see what the outcome was and have some historic rounds and just, you know, new winners is just really, really cool.
And maybe follow that up. As you said, we've had this, you know, this parity. We've had all these different winners so far here in the season. What should that communicate to the rest of the world? Like, let's just say, whether you're a new viewer and you just found disc golf in the last year or two, or you've been around for 10 years, this year we've already seen, you know, these outcomes. What do you think that says about women's disc golf right now?
I mean, I think we saw a little bit of it last year. I mean, obviously the big story was Kristen. She dominated a lot of events, but when she wasn't winning, we saw a lot of different winners. So I think it was all just kind of it was all there, but you know, the fact that she had such a historic year, not that it overshadowed those other winners, but like it was, we kind of forget that, oh yeah, you know, we had Kat Murch win, we had, you know, Haley King, we had, you know, not new winners, but a lot of different winners. And Kat Murch was a new winner. So, yeah, there it was still really exciting last year. And I think that was sort of a, you know, a little glimpse into what we were hoping to expect for the coming years. And I think we're already seeing that happen in such a short amount of time this year.
Yeah. And one of the things that Johnny alluded to just before you jumped on with us is the idea of having a major early might pull back the curtain just a little to who stayed sharper, maybe during the off season, or maybe even who just prepped better, you know, as the season rolled up, whatever the case might be. How do you feel about an early season major and having it in the time frame which we did?
Mm-hmm. Well, I prefer that over what we had last year, where it felt like it was just so backloaded and like it's already so late in the year. And, you know, that's when the grind really starts to set in. And, you know, there's something to note about that too, like who can stay sharp the longest, but at the same time, it's, it just felt, you know, really backloaded. So, you know, it was very early, but in my opinion, I think, you know, it wasn't, like I said, like the Elite Plus events also feel very prestigious and big, and it's the same amount of rounds. And so like, I don't really know what the difference is. I know that it's designated as a major and that's a big deal for a career, like I said, but yeah, I don't think that I even if I didn't win, I would say, I don't think that it was too early for a major.
And now getting this distinction, getting this major, does it, you know, you answered the question about this upcoming weekend, but does it in any other way impact decisions for this season or anything else that you had planned or hoped for or, yeah, planned out? Does it impact anything else for the rest of the season?
So far, no. Everything's the same. I suppose I was able to, you know, make my European, you know, purchases and things, travel stuff sooner, kind of,
okay.
Or at least uh-huh. a little easier, I guess. Uh-huh. But no, I think that this year I did, you know, I will be skipping out on Music City Open in a few weeks here, just to take a week off before Champions Cup. I will also be seeing like friends that I haven't seen in a while during that week off. So, you know, I'm trying to balance my schedule a little bit, make some smarter choices so that I'm not burnt out early on. But that was something I was already planned on doing before winning this weekend. So no, so far it hasn't impacted my decisions as far as what I'm going to play or how many events I plan to enter.
Well, to follow that up in terms of planning and, you know, this new title added to your resume, every contract I feel like is structured a little different. Some players themselves put more emphasis on whether they win or not, or only winning big events. Some players, you know, are based more on maybe a more regular payout, what's more of a, like an even spread out salary system. Give us details or not, but what does it mean in terms of you and your sponsorship to add an M to your resume? Mm-hmm. Is that something that's heavy in your contract or regarded heavily?
Not necessarily spelled out that way. As far as bonuses go, it holds a lot of weight. So it was a very successful weekend on that front. And also, my relationship with Discraft is such a tight knit relationship. It's business oriented, but with the ability to communicate. And, you know, if say for instance I won a major or I win Worlds, I do have a 2-year contract, but they have already spoken to me about, hey, this is if you were to win worlds, we're obviously going to do more for you, or mm-hmm. whatever. What, you know, this major is also going to yeah. have that a similar weight. So, you know, I have a lot of trust in them. You know, they've never done wrong by me. So I have no reason to not believe their word. Even if it's not written in the contract, it's a great relationship and they treat me really well.
So you were just on another podcast with the Discraft team captain.
Yeah.
Does that mean that you get to take the captain's Raptor? Cause you're a co-captain now. I mean, you have a major. Yuli doesn't.
He's been playing like 10 times longer than you.
Yeah. Do you get to take that captain's Raptor now?
Well, maybe not a captain's Raptor, but something might be in the works.
All right. That was the next question. And if they were going to work on something being a co-captain, I'm assuming you can't share what that disc might be yet.
No, but I'm sure you can make pretty good guess.
Okay.
But, I have an idea.
Yeah, there's nothing that's like holding me back from announcing anything, but we are very heavily in the, it's a brand new mold. So we're very heavily in the creation of that. And I've been testing the different runs that they've come out with over the last few weeks. I'll actually get another run tomorrow. So I'll be able to test those out. We're really trying to fine tune it to my specifications. Again, another amazing thing that Discraft does. And, you know, this was already in the works before I won the major. So it's just, you know, just something that we've been working on. We want to get it right.
Yeah. And I feel like as you work yourself through these possibilities, there's obviously there's signature discs, then there's tours series discs that we've seen. And then there's commemorative discs. There's a lot of, I think, different ways to kind of, you know, in a positive way, manipulate what's going to work out best for both the company and for yourself on any given, mm-hmm. You know, any given success. Speaking of successes, I was trying to think have we seen champagne or some kind of celebratory, reaction? Has anybody been doused more than you in disc golf because I think about all the previous years, there was obviously been excitement for decades for lots of winners, MPO and FPO. But your friends, they show out and they show up. And, you know, even when I saw you right afterwards, you're almost drenched. What is that like having so many friends right there trying to, get in on the celebration and congratulate you? What's that feel like?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's funny because after you win, it's like almost a weird, like awkward, you know, time where you're just like, okay, who needs me where? Like, what am I supposed to do now? Like, I've already put the trophy up over my head. Like, what's going on now? It's kind of like a funny kind of time. And so it's nice to have people there cheering you on and like be able to add to the celebration and add to the excitement and, make that time a little bit less awkward. Paige and James were there to, which was really cool that a few MPO players were out there spectating. Chandler Fry was out there. A few others as well were caddying. It was really nice to have them there again. I didn't know it was going to happen. I never expected it to happen. So it's just cool that they contributed to that way. It was fun.
I was really hoping we'd see maybe a bunch of the caddies give Tom a little shower with maybe just a little bit of champagne, you know?
Well, we might not have seen it, but actually Paige's caddy, Jared, who also is part of the Guardian Aliens, they do all that really cool artwork at the events. And he actually did take one of the bottles to douse Tom in because they, you know, they've become buddies. And he was like, I'm sorry I didn't douse you with it, but I had to get Tom. I was like, I understand. You're good. You're good.
that caddy bro-ship that's out there, understandably. Tom, of course, brought in on the action to help celebrate. Perkins pulled him in. I don't think that was probably necessarily expected or planned by anyone, but how do you rate Tom? How did he do during the celebration and the interview and the victory speech?
Oh, it was great. It was great. He kind of felt afterwards like a little awkward that he was brought up there because he wanted it to be my moment. But I mean, he does contribute a lot to what we do. And so, like, you know, I wouldn't, there's a good chance that, like, I wouldn't have some of the accomplishments that I have if I didn't have him helping me through those rounds. And, you know, we don't know for sure if that would be the case. But I think that in my mind, I have sort of another weapon, somebody who knows my game really well and can coach me through maybe a tough shot or a scramble shot if I'm not comfortable with a forehand roller, and he would be able to tell me what angle, what disc, you know, those types of things. Or, you know, just let me know that maybe don't take the risky shot, you don't need it, or, you know, all those little things definitely add up. And I think that he maybe doesn't feel like it they're as big of a deal, but to me they are, right? And it doesn't matter how many times I tell him that that's the case. It's you know, I don't think he understands, like, he didn't really fully feels like he's doing a lot for me, but I think that it helps a ton. And again, I think it's just another piece of the puzzle that other people don't have and is a pretty integral part to, you know, getting through the rounds with less stress, I would say.
It would be a huge lift. I understand this. I know what I'm about to ask, but has anybody thought about trying to possibly hire Tom's caddy services on the MPO side? I mean, I know that'd be double duty mornings and, you know, and then maybe late afternoons, but I mean, clearly he should be paid to be out there. And I think maybe there's plenty of MPO players that could use him, right?
Mm-hmm. Probably. I mean, you know, I think there is something to say about him probably knowing my game more than I know my game, you know, in a way, and also being able to, like, read my body language or, like, know how I'm feeling, even if I'm not, you know, expressing it verbally. So there are some key things that I think would be missing if he went to caddy for somebody else that he doesn't maybe know as well or whatever. But, I mean, eventually those things will, like, come together, I think, if they had enough time together. But if it wouldn't take away from my ability to have him on the bag, then sure. Uh-huh. But if it starts getting overlapped, then that's a no-go for me.
Yeah, the first time he hit snooze in the morning because he's tired, you're like, whoa, we're going to put an end to this, you know. This double duty that you're pulling here, we need you fresh and ready to go. That makes sense. You know, there's so much celebration of course, of you and the accomplishment and everything we've talked about. And then it feels like there is rightfully so just an entire celebration, I feel like, of the event of Austin Disc Golf, of, Mint, Chrissy Fountain, Zachary, all those guys. Like, in your words, explain what this Austin disc golf community and the women's disc golf community has been like for you guys, you know, visiting there for a couple of weeks now.
Yeah, I think it was honestly like the best of so many worlds. Like, we were in Austin, which is a huge city that has a lot of disc golf fans. We had, you know, over 300 women and girls there with their parents, with their significant others, with their family members, you know, adding to, like, the spectator experience for the FPO field. And I'm sure even for the division, the other divisions themselves. And, you know, I was just talking on another podcast of, like, wow, that, you know, the turnout looked really great. And, like, there were a lot of spectators and there were a lot of people on, you know, the green of 18 or on 17's green or watching different holes throughout the course. And I think that was one of, you know, those were some of the reasons why we had so many people there, is that it's an event that a lot of people, that's the one event that they come to. That's the one event that they save up money for, to be able to go play or go spectate or be there for a family member or a friend. And I think it just helped that it was in a city like Austin that also has a lot of disc golf fans and a lot of pride in their courses in their city. And then Austin Beer Works was just like, if we could have a tournament at a brewery all the time, I think that would be just the best for spectators and for, for the players. It just, I think it brought a lot of people in, and it made it more enticing to come and hang out. And maybe you were only going to go watch behind hole one and hole 10 the whole day, but like, that's fine. You know, that was a great spot to be. And then you could walk over to 18 when some of the final cards come through. Everything was right there. And I think the overall experience has always been really fulfilling. And like I said, being able to talk to the FJ15, the FJ12, the FA2s, all the other divisions and people that were there, and, you know, give them words of encouragement or just talk through their round or like, how did the end go? Seeing kids that were a part of my old, you know, Longs Peak Disc Golf Club in Colorado and being like, hey, this is so cool. And, you know, repping the club and, having those connections. It was a really, really fulfilling weekend overall.
Yeah. What I would follow that up and say, if you or your club are thinking about any kind of event, and, you know, I know we're talking USWDGC specifically, but look at what it takes to be able to pull something off of this magnitude in terms of the amount of courses that they had, in terms of the volunteers that you're going to need, the support that you're going to need, all of those types of things, and then see where maybe you fit in. Maybe you don't have the capacity to hold a 350 woman, you know, USWDGC, but maybe there's some other event that, you know, you could bid on or your club could bid on. And one of the things that blew me away was the amount of people that talked about the immediate development of the Sprinkle Valley course. And people saying, you know, I was here 6 months ago and it was roughed out, or it existed, but just barely, so to speak. And then to see where it was at, and then to have everybody talk about where they feel like it's going to go to and ultimately get at, you know, after given a couple more, you know, months or years, I think has been incredible. For you, is there something that you, when you think about big women's events, whether it's U.S. Women's or the WGE or the Rocky Mountain Women's, where I originally met you, what is it about some of those women's events that you want to maybe echo to the rest of the world and say, hey, if you focus on these things, that'll help make them more successful? Is there anything that jumps out at you?
I think that I remember, I don't remember which U.S. Women's it was in the past, but there might have been like a funny tea time thing where some of the younger girls weren't able to come watch us. And I think they learned over time, like, okay, maybe let's make sure that, you know, the FPO division is later in the day. And then it was something like that, where maybe we weren't as late in the day as we normally would have been or whatever, or now that we were now. But anyway, that was like something that, again, was sort of like the feedback was taken. And then it was, you know, since then, I think we had, like I said, I saw so many junior players at Tournament Central or watching in the crowd. It's just, those women's events are so important for the growth of the sport. And for, again, like I said, I saw some FA1 players who said to me, you know, I hope to play in FPO one day, and were able to come and watch and see what we were doing, and be able to learn just through spectating, and then talking to us afterwards and being able to be right there to have those conversations with. And, you know, I think that it's important for that exposure. And even actually, I think like the FJ15 division, I think was filmed by Gatekeeper Media, which is so cool. Like they got that kind of like early exposure to cameras for better or worse. But I think that it was all good. You know, I think that it's just a really cool experience, and have that post-produced coverage commentated by Nathan Queen and Rebecca Cox, like, really cool. Like it's something that I think was a nice addition this year. I don't know if they've done it in the past, but it was the first time I noticed that they had coverage of those junior divisions. So overall, I don't know, it's just a special experience. And I think that it's grown so much. I mean, we keep talking about the numbers, and I know that there was like something put out there about this was like the most women that have won over $1,000, like 48 women or something like that. Like, that's crazy that we couldn't even get, you know, that would, that you wouldn't even heard that a few years ago. So, yeah, all of it just comes together, and it just, it's so impactful for the future of women in the sport. And it starts from the bottom, and we have some of the youngest ones there and then some of the oldest ones there. So it's just a really cool time for me to even meet some of the people from that have built, you know, our division from the ground up, that have been, you know, been there from the beginning, like, you know, Tita and all of those people that I've heard about, but maybe hadn't met before or actually can talk to and have those, you know, cool conversations with. I don't know. It's just special.
Well, it is. And I think about someone like, I was just going to quickly say, Johnny, someone like Sue Horn, PDGA number 68 is out there and playing and competing and having a good time. And like you said, Tita Ugalde, and Chris O'Cleary, one of our first ever women's, you know, FPO women's world champions, who hasn't been actively playing in a ton of these U.S. women's. And then I saw her in the, you know, the player area, or the vendor area afterwards. And she's like, this is everything we dreamed of 30 and 40 years ago. It's been a long road, but the fact that we're starting to arrive and get at some of these things. You know, I just looked, I randomly picked a year of the U.S. women's just in the last few years. 2019, I just randomly clicked on winner there, $2,500. You know, so to fast forward just 5 years and to see you winning $12,000 at dinner just a few years ago was getting $2,500. And there was probably only about two, maybe three people in the whole tournament that cracked $1,000 for the weekend. And now seeing, like you said, as many as we did, just incredible in terms of the overall growth. Yeah. So,
well, I'll even say, like, it kind of, I remember a few years back, maybe, you know, there were some complaints about a U.S. women's, whatever, all the things. And I think that it's even grown so much since just a few years ago. And now, you know, talking to some of the women that, you know, that had such a huge hand in creating our division, basically, and having more of those conversations with those people and a greater appreciation for everything that they've done, and trying to stay, now that we're at a point where it just seems like it's grown so much in just a couple of years, you know, imagine what it must seem like for those people that saw it from the ground up, you know. And so trying to keep that in perspective and continue to be grateful for what everyone before me has done. And then when I'm talking to these junior players, trying to continue sort of that same, continue that path and try to be that same person that they were for us to these younger players, and trying to take more responsibility on myself for that. And that's just a great time and event to be able to do that. And I think that now I would never say that, you know, U.S. women shouldn't happen, you know, or it should be separate from FPO or something like that, because those were some of the talks that I feel like did come up at some times. And but I don't know that I feel that way. And maybe I did. That's why I'm saying that. Maybe I did at one point, but I don't think now I feel as strongly that way, because of, you know, all of the perspective that I've gained through having multiple U.S. women's under my belt now.
Well, we know that you're going to, we're going to have one more up here in Wisconsin next year. You'll be coming up here for it's almost like a mini family reunion, because it's going to be up in the Manitowoc area. You've got Alyssa's family is, you know, probably going to be running the event. And if we're lucky, I'm sure we'll have you on the show before then, but maybe we get on the way through on a Tuesday night, we can get you into the studio here with a bunch of the other women. I think that could be a lot of fun.
That could be fun. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And that, I guess that makes me think, I don't know the exact date, but your reign, so to speak, will probably be then a little longer, with the last one being a little shorter and us starting out and ending in October and now start being in March. I'm guessing, well, I guess as the schedule unfolds, I'm guessing we'll probably see you sometime midsummer, maybe even late summer. Yeah, I'm not sure they have the date set.
No, they don't. I just checked on the dates, but you have to assume it's sometime near Preserve / Ledgestone would make the most sense.
Yeah,
we'll see. I don't know. Some Midwest money is ready for Missy to show up and put it in her pocket with you know, the likes of Ledgestone being around. Of course, you know, you didn't need a win to be more well liked than you are. You know, you're definitely a fan favorite out there by so many people, understandably. But how much are you inundated, and how much are the messages come flooding in? Do you have to does some of that siphon off to, does Tom just sitting there replying 24/7 because you can't keep up? How does that work after a big win like this?
It is kind of like a balancing act, because, like, you know, I could sit there and respond to every single person, or maybe just double tap a heart or something, you know, like trying to balance that all. And I will say, maybe I had a little bit too much fun celebrating Sunday night. So yesterday was a little tough for me to respond to people.
That's okay.
It's okay. It only happens once in a while, you know. But yeah, so if I didn't respond to anybody, just know that I was trying. I really was.
Your phone or your fingers might not have been working at the time. No.
Right.
So maybe explain to everybody. I overheard, I talked to Paige briefly, and I had comedy lined up, but you, what did you guys end up doing on Sunday night to go out and celebrate?
Well, we ended up going to the Austin Cidercade. So they have cider, and you pay one fee to get in, and so hard cider, what, you know, soft drinks too, all the stuff, and some food, and you pay one fee to get in, and then basically you have like unlimited arcade games and pinball and you know, basketball, skee ball, whatever, all the things. So it was really fun to just kind of bounce around and play games with a bunch of people. A lot of people ended up coming. I basically invited the whole crowd, so I was expecting a lot more people, but thankfully it wasn't quite as many people that that I thought it was going to be. But it was a great little crew of people. And then afterwards, we just sort of realized right around the corner there was a karaoke bar, so we ended up going to the karaoke bar. We were kind of late to the party, so by the time we all signed up, like, we were never going to get on stage. So whatever, we got to sing with like other people that were up there. But it was fun. It was a great time. And yeah, it was a nice way to kind of like let loose a little bit and enjoy the celebration.
Well, certainly well earned, well deserved. A lot of people, when they take down victories and have big wins, or any wins of any size, have some kind of special celebration, you know, that's almost reserved for just that. Like, this is my treat when I win. Is there anything that either you purchased or a place you're going to go, anything you're going to do that's a little extra special, that's kind of reserved for wins, especially when you're winning the biggest, you know, cash prizes? But anything reserved for that special occasion?
Not necessarily. My birthday is on Friday. So that was kind of like a cool thing to have this big win sort of like as a birthday present to myself in a way. But no, like on Thursday there is a PGA golf event happening here in Houston over the weekend. Mm-hmm. And the first day is on Thursday, and I enjoy watching golf. It's actually what I did each morning before the tournament last week. Watched it on TV, and it just sort of gives me a cool little like zen thing. And ever since like Full Swing on Netflix came out, it, you know, I got to know, you know, quote, the players a little bit. So me, Tom, and actually Paige are gonna go and walk around in Houston here for the Houston Open and watch like Scottie Scheffler, who's number one in the world. And just have a cool little outing on Thursday. I don't know if there's any plans for my birthday. I'm kind of nervous to if some people are planning something, and I don't know what that's going to be, but I've heard rumblings. If it doesn't happen, it's fine. I'm very okay, especially after having a nice celebration for this win the other night. I'm good to just take it easy for for the rest of the week.
Okay. Okay. A couple of good follow-ups that came off the board. Someone did ask, what song, if you could get on stage and there's only one opportunity, one chance, one moment. No. If there's only one song that you get to actually perform, what's the go-to?
The go-to is Sir Duke by Stevie Wonder.
Okay.
Or any like 90s pop or late 90s, early 2000s pop, because that's all I listened to growing up was basically, not all I listened to, but what was very popular was NSYNC and Backstreet Boys and Britney Spears. So like those are just songs that I know by heart, but sure. I have done Sir Duke by Stevie Wonder many times. So.
Okay. Interesting. what a unique choice. I just don't think I know anyone else that has replied or would respond that way. So I love it. It's certainly unique. Is it any tougher to maintain a focus? I know you're busy and you won and you're going to do this fun stuff and it's your birthday. I mean, we always talk about like hangover, so to speak, not necessarily in a literal sense, but just kind of the winner's hangover, you know, come the next weekend.
Yeah.
You know, maybe your guard's down or whatever. How are you going to combat that? How are you going to fight that off? Or aren't you?
Honestly, yeah, I don't know. I don't think I'm actively thinking about it. I didn't practice today. I took today off, and I'm only going to practice tomorrow as far as what's planned. I know that the course hasn't really changed much. And it was pretty straightforward from last year. Like there's nothing that I could think of that, you know, was really, really difficult or weighs on my mind of something like I need to work on for that course. So I'm going to rely on, you know, my instincts and, you know, my pretty simple game that I already, you know, I probably could just go and play blind, to be honest. Not that I would necessarily win, but I think that it's because of how simple my game usually is. I'm not really worried about this particular park style course. So I'm going to practice tomorrow. I'm going to take it seriously. I'm probably going to take it a little extra seriously because I'm only planning on practicing one day. Just enjoy a little bit more rest and relaxation. But I'm going to go into it just as ready to go and just as, you know, determined to win as I usually do. And yeah, hopefully it'll all work out. But yeah, there. I'm sure there will be a little bit in the back of my mind that's a little more carefree, but that could honestly work in my favor. So we'll see. We'll see how it all shakes out.
Awesome. Well, we know you have a ton of things going on. You used to have people to reply to, I'm sure. Before we let you go, is there anyone you want to shout out, thank, recognize, places we can follow, support you, all of those kind of stuff and things? Give us your socials and all that. What we can be doing as fans.
Oh yeah, I mean, thank you to Tom, my husband, and Caddy, as always, and thank you to all my sponsors: Discraft, Grip, Whale Sacks, Ledgestone, and thanks you guys for having me on. You can go to my website, which is teamdiscraft.com, and my link will be right there under Missy Gannon to see all of my merch and stuff that's available. We will be coming out with a commemorative disc for this win soon, so hopefully that'll be out there, in the next week or so. And you can follow me on Instagram. That's where I mostly post, so that's at Missy_discgolf. And I think that's about it. Yeah, thanks to everybody who sent me a message, and there were a lot of them. So I if I didn't respond already, I do really appreciate all the kind words and everything that people had to say. So, yeah.
Well, again, rightfully deserved. It's been incredible to watch you come up through the game and immediately I don't know if it's fair or not. I would like to say that it felt like you were almost taken under Paige's wing at one point early on, and that she wanted to help support and encourage you. And so to see you come into your own and obviously have the successes you've had over these last few years, and to just watch you grow as a golfer and then as one of our elite players out there on the tour, it's been incredible to see. And it's I think all the way back to those days of meeting you at the Rocky Mountain Women's many years ago, and then watching you at, you know, I remember Paige saying something to me about, you know, we're thinking about asking her if she wants to, you know, be sponsored. Should we do it before or after her final nine at Am Worlds in like 2017 or whatever that was? And just to see everything that you've done has been incredible. So well-earned, well-deserved, and congratulations.
Thank you
so much for joining us.
Yeah, tonight. And actually, to think about that, too, I had a moment with Paige on the 18th green this past weekend. You know, she was emotional, and she was, you know, congratulating me and saying how proud of me she was. And, you know, I reminded her, like, she paid for my first entry fee into US Women's back when I didn't have this, you know, the level of sponsorship to be able to get that. Mm-hmm. And so she, you know, she had a huge part in my, you know, come up in the game. And it's just kind of a crazy full circle moment where, you know, my first US Women's was because of her. And now I have won the last US Women's that I've participated in so far. So it's just a really cool moment. And it's fun to reflect on those times, like you said, at Rocky Mountain Women's, and to think that was only, you know, less than 10 years ago is crazy to think about.
Yeah, it is. and again, all the successes come from your dedication and your hard work and everything that you've put into the sport, and to watch it all come back. I can't imagine was one upset person on the planet that was out there watching and participating in any capacity. Just as we've watched you win and lose with grace throughout all these years. And it's been incredible to see. So again, thank you. Congratulations one final time. And hopefully we'll be talking to you more. You're welcome to join anytime. You don't have to win, but you're welcome here anytime on the show. So thanks for joining us.
Cool. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Missy.
All right. Take care. Have a good night. See ya.
Bye.
See ya.
One-time major winner, Missy Gannon. Awesome. Awesome to say.
Yeah. And you know, something I was thinking about as we were closing out is how DGPT had put out a clip, or DGN put out a clip of asking her earlier in the year, you know, do you have goals? You know, what does that look like? And, you know, she said, I don't really set them, but I would like to win a major. To get it done at your first opportunity, like she said, somewhat of a relief here in the early goings. And the same thing can be said in the sense that we all knew she was going to get one. It was just a matter of when. And, you know, last year, Kristen didn't really leave a lot of opportunities for others. She kind of went out and locked those down in the fashion that she did. But for Missy to go out and get this first one in 2024 is certainly pretty awesome.
So, Terry, do you want to know who else is a one-time major champion this weekend?
Well, there's a lot of people.
I'm sure there was a lot of them, but the one
Stephanie Vincent.
Of, yeah.
Stephanie Vincent is now as well in FP40.
Yeah, I figured we would just celebrate a few of the other winners real quick. Stephanie Vincent, Austin native, wins in the FP40, upsetting Jen Allen, I would say. Jen Allen had her by about 30 ratings points. So the fact that Stephanie came in, I think I saw some sort of stat that says of Stephanie's like 44 wins, 43 of them are in Texas, which just means
45 wins, 44 were in Texas.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, it's amazing. Stephanie is one of the founders down there. So congratulations, Stephanie Vincent. FP50 JK wins this one by 13 strokes over Des Redding. FP55 Chris O'Cleary, as we had mentioned. FP60 Pamouflage wins this. Yep. FP65 Sandy Gast. FP70 Sue Horn. FP75 Lynn Gerber.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And I guess we'll go through the FAs as well. FA1, Addison Woodward. FA40, Janae Chaney. I'm going to go with that pronunciation. FA50, Allie Lawler. FA55, Kim King. FA60, Donna Stanley. FA70, Patty Adams. FA2, Micah Tilford. FA3, Nikki Haney. FA4, Susan Zepeda. FJ18, Rebecca Don. FJ15, Shelby Cohen. FJ12, Eva Lutsenko. FJ10, Hayden Harper. So congratulations to all of our major winners. Many of them are one-time major winners now.
Yeah, I believe I was told mid-round on, and we could go do the math now, but I believe it was 21 champions ultimately crowned this weekend. So congratulations to all of our champions. Lots of great battles. I heard about some of them. Of course, Sunday night, everyone's done. We're wrapping up. It's the awards. Austin Beer Works is flowing. You know, everything's going on. And I'm hearing some of the war stories that were happening out there. Well, I had so-and-so by two and this happened and then such and such happened on the final hole and all the battles you would expect out there. So congratulations. I've met a number of the winners that you just referenced as well. Someone like Micah, who I know won FA2, has only been playing for a couple of years and just started around 2020. And has come up very quickly. And as one of her competitors said to me later, she goes, yeah, she probably played herself right out of the division ratings wise too. and she's probably going to be okay with that. So, so many great stories. And then to be surrounded by these legends, you know, I know we talked about Tita Ugalde and others, so many others in even more so in our generation and seeing the Des Reddings and the Elaine, the Des Reddings and the Juliana Corvers out there on the course and then interacting with them after the fact, you know, players that we very much were around, you know, on a weekend and, you know, week in and week out basis was really awesome to see. So congrats to all of them. Like I said, it was so fun to be on the ground and have all these interactions with everyone as best as I could. And the fact that the O-Town girls did what they did, I'm excited to see them this weekend here back in Florida as well, taking down FP60 and FP65, Sandy and Pam. That was obviously all the news going on in terms of golf, all the news that mattered, in my opinion. There was obviously probably some other tournaments, other places. Some players, some MPO players were out there actively participating. Some were just passively watching and participating in that sense. A few players went, you know, down to Houston or over to Houston and then started getting themselves prepped. But all the eyes and ears were understandably and rightfully so right there at the USWDGC. So tip of the hat again to Mint Disc, to all of the work that they did, especially I think one thing that maybe gets under recognized even in this sense is that they probably weren't on the timeline that they either bid for or hoped on, but because the Texas swing is when it is, you're kind of pigeonholed, just like you said about Manitowoc next year. I guarantee you U.S. Women's isn't happening in Manitowoc in March next year. It's not coherent with the tour. And who knows what the weather is going to be like. So we're absolutely not going to have it at the same time next year. So the fact that the everyone at Mint and all of the Austin area, after also hosting the Open at Austin, then working and coming back the next weekend to do what they're doing for the U.S. Women's, I don't envy any of that workload. I was going to say, I can only fathom what they had to do and how they pulled it all off. So again, tip of the cap to pulling off a very successful weekend. And I think they probably reignited some other people's sparks about the idea of hosting events and or finding ways to cater explicitly and specifically to the women's crowd, because they did so many things so right this weekend, and it was definitely awesome to see. Yeah. I don't know that I have much else. I don't know if we want to wrap up a few other just random thoughts and call it a night, or if we want to bother closing and then coming back with an after show, or I can just give you a few more thoughts and then we could call it and we can make it a short one tonight since you're not feeling well.
You're right. Like I just like literally 10 minutes before the show, I messaged Sharon. I'm like, dude, I think you might have to do this one by yourself. And he was like, I don't know if that can happen in this short of notice. So I got myself.
Everybody say goodbye to Johnny. It might be his last.
I've been muting myself. This is what happens when you turn 46. You just fall apart, Terry. Don't do it. Don't turn 46.
I won't. I'm going to stay 45.
Stay 45
forever. August rolls around. I think that's Ledgestone week. It almost is every year. I'll just remain like an old record. I'll just stay 45.
Stay forever. At 45. Good plan. Terry, let's just make this a slightly normal one. We won't do an after show. Did you have any other, what other thoughts did you want to bring?
Just this would be otherwise after show fodder.
Okay.
Essentially though, that I ultimately took in five consecutive nights of comedy in some capacity in Austin. From the day I got there to the day I left. So I'm doing the research, so some of you don't have to. And it was a lot of fun. The very first night, and it went really as far. And yes, Austin is very much a comedy town, and obviously the mothership and Joe Rogan, all of that's like its own, massive elephant in the room. Those are kind of like the obvious, but Austin just in general has been known for comedy. And obviously South by Southwest just wrapped up a couple weeks ago. With special screenings and comedians and things of that nature. But when it was all said and done, I was able to take in improv at the Fallout Theater the first night. The second night, I was at Cold Town, which, again, many of you will be familiar with these names, but Cold Town, which had like improv and almost wannabe stand-up, it wasn't great. The third night, it was Nate Doss and Avery Jenkins and myself did go to the Comedy Mothership, which is kind of the most revered crown jewel, Joe Rogan place that Joe Rogan owns. So we went there on Friday night. Saturday night, I ended up on the north side of town at Capital City Comedy, which was kind of the most traditional stand-up. Well, yeah, I guess Friday night was too. But Saturday night was unique in that it was stand up. It basically had an opener, and then Jason Mewes, who many of from the Clerks, Mallrats, Kevin Smith world, and it was interesting. Like it clearly was a little bit of a super fan almost. Not, it wasn't cult. It was definitely a super fan experience. I wouldn't say I'm a super fan, but you could see the people that were. And so that was kind of interesting. And then Sunday night, I went to, I capped it off with one of the most unique comedy experiences in my life. And that was where it was at the Cave in the Creek or Cave in the Creek or something like that. Downtown, no cover, no drink minimum, nothing, no item minimum, nothing, completely free. And the format was essentially, you put your name in a bucket. At some point, your name would get drawn, but everybody puts their name in the bucket that wants to go on stage. You go on stage and you're supposed to get 1 minute uninterrupted to say your joke, set up your story, give your punchline, all that stuff. Do whatever you want to do for that 1 minute. At the end of 1 minute, everyone else in the entire place can just blurt out their heckles and their insults. And then it just really became, how much can we roast the person on stage, regardless of how good their joke or jokes were? It was just a matter of how much can we roast the person on stage? And that goes on for about 5 to 10 minutes. They called it the banana phone, like, because you're throwing back or heckling back. I don't know.
Okay.
It was, there were, of course, moments of brilliance and hilarity, and some things were really stupid because you basically then have a room of 20 or 30 people who also are planning to go on stage, and they're all trying to be as funny as possible. So they're hurling these insults, some of which, you know, hit real good and some that didn't or landed. It was just, it was bizarre. It was absolutely bizarre. Like, you're essentially signing up to go get roasted in front of all these people. And a lot of people were regulars. So, you know, they're there clearly every Sunday night. And so there's some traction with some people. It was just bizarre. I have no better way to explain it other than bizarre.
And you got on stage?
I did not. I had no idea. I had no idea. I have nothing prepared in any capacity. The one thing I'll say to it that was disheartening is I feel like people are like, they're just waiting with bated breath for like 45 seconds to hit or 50 seconds to hit. They don't even care at all what the jokes were, even good or bad. It felt like every single person that went up there, quote unquote, bombed, because all people were concerned about is how were they going to heckle the person? Like, you were definitely stepping up there with like two strikes against you. And it's not even fair.
I wonder, but, and maybe
it was wild.
Maybe you could attest to this, but I wonder if like you got up there, you did like 45 or 50 seconds, and then, you know, it's coming. You sit down and just say something like, and I was just diagnosed with cancer, and just see what happens to the crowd. Like, just try to kill the crowd coming at you. I'm clearly not true or anything like that, but I wonder if you could.
I don't think they would have cared. I don't think okay. No, because the whole point is to like absolutely break down this person. So you have to go up there.
Yeah.
Like, you know the format, right? So you have to go up there just knowing, I mean, whether it was your height or your weight, your size, they say they tried to stay away from racist jokes. That didn't go so well. They go after anything and everything. And then there's a whole panel of people that are kind of like, I'll call them like the professional hecklers. There's like five people up in front that have mics.
Oh, wow.
And they're a little bit more established comedians, local comedians. And so they're like leading the charge. But then if I wanted to blurt something out, there was nothing, you know, and if it was funny, it got a laugh. If it wasn't, you know, so on. But it was such a unique, you know, after seeing a couple of stand-ups, after seeing a little bit of improv, you know, it was just such a perfect way to kind of round out my fifth night in a row there. So
that's great.
10 out of 10 recommend going to see it. Just know you're in for a unique treat. And it worked out well because it was 10 o'clock on a Sunday night. And a lot of the shows, you know, with us not getting done until 6:30, whatever, and then socializing at Austin Beer Works, it was really tough to try and get to some of the shows unless they were later. So it worked out really well in that sense. But yeah, it was kind of cool. Other people that I met included Michael over at Austin Beer Works. Him and I had maybe actually crossed paths 13, 14 years ago in some capacity. So that was pretty cool. And that, again, just to echo what Austin Beer Works has done with, you know, teaming up with Mint on that Sprinkle Valley property, Missy said it best. And there were others that said that, like, this is what every big tournament should be, is at a brewery with food carts, with tons of vending, and then, you know, the 50 acres in the back that have a world championship course on it, that all might be a little bit pie in the sky and a little bit ambitious, but everyone loved it. The only people that didn't were some of the other divisions that then had, you know, play for their day and then maybe a little bit of a long journey to get out to Sprinkle Valley. I mean, you have 350 women.
Yeah, you can't. There's only there's a lot of courses in Austin, but there's even still only so many major quality courses in the area. And with as many groups as you have, somebody's going to have to make division. The drive.
Yeah, and then you've got all the different divisions, and you're ranging from FJ10s, you know, to FA60s, and then FPOs. Like, you have a lot of different skill sets, which honestly makes this event one of the most daunting and challenging of the year to run, because you have such a huge disparity and vast difference in player caliber. And that's no rip on anyone, but your two different divisions, your 21 different divisions have very different needs. And inevitably you're going to get someone that's saying, oh, we're playing this course and it's way too easy. And another division is going to say, we're playing this course and this is way above our skill level.
Sure.
Like it's, I'm not making excuses, but it's damn near unavoidable. Like,
yeah, I was wondering if Manitowoc is going to get any new courses for this,
I don't think new. I think there's, you know, a lot of courses in Manitowoc, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
You know, not far from where Johnny and I are, we can speak to it, because first of all, a lot of the courses have multiple tees. Like, that's just something Wisconsin's largely has invested in at a lot of courses. So multiple tees can certainly help that. And then we do have a variety of courses in that area. Because you have, Indian Creek, I know, Johnny, which, you know, you and I had played and then kind of was forgotten for a while. I think that's going to get rehabbed and be very playable for appropriate divisions. Yep.
Cato Falls.
Silver Creek has the two courses, or potentially one, depending on how you look at it. And then you're out at Rolling Ridge, where they have two or three tees and then two or three baskets at every single hole.
Yeah.
And it's private property. So you have options there for various, abilities. So I don't think that, those are just a few off the top of our head.
You could even go down to Cleveland, the Cleveland course, right?
Yeah. I don't know if you could play that one, but Lakeshore Technical College.
That's what I meant. The Lakeshore Technical College. Yeah, that's the one LTC. I was thinking. Yeah. So,
Sheboygan's only 30 minutes away. So it was so great to see, and I love all the effort and the energy, and it's tough. A lot of people look at last year. They were in North Carolina, and all three courses were in the same park. So you had that huge advantage, even with a diversity of courses. This year, they couldn't all obviously be at the same site, but you probably had them a little more tailored to each of the divisions, even more finely tuned, because you had those options. So, pretty cool to see for sure. I wanted to share that Austin, comedy experience, going out with Nate and Avery to Joe Rogan's, the comedy mothership is, I feel like if you're at all into comedy, everybody has that on their list while you're there, is to be able to check that out. So yes, it was pretty cool. It's really serious that you go in and they take your phone and put it in a, RFID protected bag that's locked. So like, you can't even get into, they let you hold on to it, but you can't get into your phone or access it for the entire time that you're in there. Obviously trying to protect all the comedians. The comedians were all really good that night. I don't remember all the names, but most of them were really good, except for the closer. So it was definitely a cool experience. And Houston, just a really quick look forward to that. As I said at the top of the show, I am not involved with Houston's broadcast.
Me neither.
Ian and the rest of the crew will be. Probably Ian and JK Corver, if I had to guess. I don't think it's Zoe.
All right, we'll figure it out.
And then probably Ian and Philo. Yeah. Hope everything goes well. Of course, they have good luck and a good time there. I myself will be at Throwdown the Mountain, for the final weekend, the pro, MP40 and MPO weekend, looking forward to coverage. Depending on how things go, we're intentionally not going to try and release and compete with the Austin's coverage. Like, that doesn't make a lot of sense for me. So there will be recording, of course, and, working on getting it all edited, but it may get delayed by a couple days, because trying to release it when everything's going on in Houston. it doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense. So it'll probably be delayed by a couple days intentionally. So before anyone gets worked up, just letting you know. Ace Run is on the board and saying, Eisenhood 2, we believe. Oh, from Alta World. So maybe it's Charlie's in the booth with those guys? Because it wouldn't be Charlie and Ian.
No.
So it's probably Charlie and somebody. Ace Run, what are you guys doing? You guys both off this weekend? It's just goofing around? I'll send you a message. Yeah, Johnny. Johnny celebrated his birthday last Wednesday as we closed out the show. You're older.
I'm older.
That's good. I don't know that I have much else of significance at the moment that we can't cut you loose. You're not feeling well, and I've got prep work to do. Excited for this weekend.
Yeah, no, that's that.
You got anything else?
No, not really. That all sounds phenomenal. Next week we'll have, I don't know if we have anything special lined up for episode 500, but we'll figure, maybe we'll figure something out. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Eric, we'll talk about that maybe more next week. There's, I sent Johnny the post, something about, it's not quite like a fantasy pick'em side tangent tournament thing. I don't know what's going on. We'll see if we can investigate more of that, and hopefully have more info for you next week. So for now, everyone, be well, be safe, have a great weekend. Enjoy your spring break if that's what you're out doing or your family's doing or whomever. Make sure you guys are safe wherever you might be, because I know spring break's running wild all around the country. And I hope everyone's going to be safe and have a good one. Thank you to Missy Gannon, our now one-time major champion. I think it's going to be one of many more to come. And it was awesome to be in the booth calling the shots along with Zoe and Val Jenkins, because it was a good battle. It was a great moment. And the parody in FPO continues. So for Johnny V, I'm the Disc Golf Guy. Congrats again to Missy Gannon. That is Smashbox TV Podcast 499. We'll see you next week. You step inside the Smashbox.
Thank you to our $2 and above patrons. Your name is listed below in the credits. If you are interested in being listed as a producer in the Smashbox TV credits and supporting this and other fine podcasts, please visit patreon.com/smashboxtv.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.